You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1. Registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor, or 2. Solely investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor. Integrated Partners and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
WTCM News Talk 580, cue the bongo player. It's time for Prout Financial Design's New Retirement Radio with Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
Man, it's good to have you back, Ron Jolly.
Good to be back.
Holy cow. There you have it, sir.
Back in
the intro alone, pew, off into the sunset. So good to be here. So good to be here on Thursday morning. Good morning, all. May 29th. I'm not sure who that was. It was just, you know, maybe that's Dennis being extra expressive.
One of the many personalities.
Whatever voice that was, I'm not sure.
Just trying to make sure you're all awake. What? Yeah, awake. Because we have so much to talk about. We're rather wound. We've had our coffee. We're ready to rock and roll, as it were. Now, for those of you who don't like rock and roll, no offense intended. Yeah, what's wrong with you, says Colleen. Good morning. Sorry, I sure shouldn't have repeated that. Not fair. He's out of control. Well, it's great to have you along with us. Thank you for listening. We love doing this show. You probably knew that from the get-go. If you do have a question of a financial nature, Ron, how would they get in touch with us, please?
You can text that on your device to us, or you can call us on the telephone. Either way, same number, 231 area code. 947-0023.
Now, I don't have their names written on my notes here, which is kind of odd, but Heidi Cartwright is with us here this morning, our own RICP and Managing Director. Good morning, Heidi Cartwright.
Good morning, Dennis. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm excited. Spring is here. The lilacs are blooming, and
oh yeah,
it's great. Driving in and seeing all those flowers is great.
Outside our office as well, and they look great.
Oh, they do.
Beauteous. And Beth Shire. Beth Shire, own Managing Director of Marketing.
Mm-hmm. Good morning. It's good to be here. And good morning to all our lovely listeners this morning.
Hey, you'll be talking about stats and some interesting stats, too. Today we're talking about mostly from Ed Slott's June newsletter. I mean, all the variety is crazy. Now, what's interesting, I think, is you know what the news is. Everybody's talking about the economy. Everybody's talking at me. Don't hear a word they're saying most of the time. But we're going to be talking about how this applies to you in terms of your accounts, your assets, your life. It's a big picture. Now, as we also know, the baby boom generation has changed everything that it impacted as it aged. And guess what?
What?
It's changing retirement as well. Thank you very much. Now, part of this is the inheritance of IRAs. That means someone has passed away. In this case, it's a beneficiary IRA, usually a parent. Thank you. Usually a parent has passed away. And the child, naturally being more than 10 years younger than you, thank goodness for that.
Hopefully.
Yes. They are what's called a non-eligible designated beneficiary. It means they have to take it out over a 10-year period to make a short of it. Well, okay. They have to take it out over 10 years. Well, aren't the rules, haven't they changed somewhat? Or weren't there some weird anomalies, rather, if I can say the word? Yes. And why is that important? Because there are certain rules that are going to have to be caught up with even this year. Like, let's just say Her name is Joan. She passed away at age 75, relatively early. Her beneficiary is her son in this case. He gets this account, all $500,000 of it. From 22, she passed away. Let's just say that. 2022, $500,000. Well, he's not had to take any distributions, even though she was already at RMD age. So because she was 75, backing up a bit, she had to take required minimum distributions from that IRA in the range of about 4% per year. We'll just say for the case of argument here, about $20,000 per year she had to take out. Well, he inherits the IRA in 22. IRS waived the requirement for taking RMDs, even though she had already been, and that was the new rules. So they waived it for 22, 23, and 2024. Now in 25, that rule has changed. Mm-hmm. He didn't have to take those, even though he might have wanted to, given, let's say, his income was lower in those years. So he missed out. You can't go back, but it is 25. So, Heidi, does he need to take an RMD, at least a required minimum distribution this year in 2025?
Since his mother, Joan, was already taking RMDs, the answer is yes. He would have an RMD required throughout the period until the 10th year after he and Joan passes away, where the entire balance would have to come out.
So by 12/31 of 32, he has to have emptied that IRA. Wow.
And he gets taxed on all of that, right?
Right. It's fully taxable. Now, you have that is, in essence, a joint account with you and the federal government.
Because they own part of it.
Very much.
They're going to get part of it anyway.
Right. They're going to get part of it anyway. And I cheated because Heidi referenced that as Ed Slott having said that.
Yeah.
And so in our practice session here this morning, that's how I cheated, if you will. Okay. So it's interesting to note that of the amount that has to be drawn, let's say it's worth $600,000 today, because he wasn't taking any distributions and he invested all in tech stocks and he's just been watching that thing go crazy. $600,000. Well, today, in 2025, he'd have to take out about $30,000 minimum. But he also has to empty it by the end of 32. Now, how many years is 2032 from today in 25? It's about class. How
class,
many years?
Class?
Seven. Most would say seven.
7 years. So $600,000.
Except for new math, where you might come out with something different.
Yeah. $600,000 divided by seven.
80,000. No, that's not right. 600,000 divided by seven.
$600,000 divided by seven equals about 86 grand.
86 pretty grand. Good.
I wanted to be sure because it's a bit of an odd.
If you do the same amount every year, which you don't have to do, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Now, you don't have to take the full 87. He could take just the minimum, which previously we mentioned would have been about 30,000. Why would he want to take more? Why would he want to take more than the minimum in this case?
Well, I think the people who listened to the show last week might remember our discussion about maybe not focusing on the minimum you take out, but the maximum that you can take out, maybe looking at those tax brackets. How much can I get out each year at a lower tax bracket than leaving that lump sum for the
at
future?
A lower tax bracket might be 12 paltry percent. Now, you're not going to think 12% is cheap when you're taking it out. Mm-hmm. Neither will your accountant, just for full disclosure. But it's still one of the cheapest brackets we've ever had. And that bracket is good for a couple filing jointly all the way to about how much income, Heidi?
I think they're expanding that, too, under the big, beautiful bill.
Under the big, beautiful bill.
Yes.
So that 12% bracket extends for married individuals filing jointly to about $97,000 of taxable income. That means your total income could be about $125,000 or so. And after your standard deduction, that's going to take you down to about 97. So long story short, man, fill up that bracket. That's a great investment into your future. In the case of conversions and or taking these sums out that you have to take.
But if Joan's son's already making money, right? I mean, we're assuming he doesn't want to take his minimum, so he's earning money. If he takes the 87, that definitely puts him in a new bracket, doesn't it? A higher tax bracket?
Who knows what his other income is?
Well, there's all those life stories out of there. Maybe he's a couple years from retirement, so for the first 2 years he's going to take his RMD, but then in that third year, when he's no longer working, maybe he goes down in tax brackets, and then he would take a larger amount. So you always want to run these things through your own story.
Exactly. So your situation may change. You may, well, you certainly have to take the required minimum. You got to take the $30,000. But again, as Heidi mentioned, should you take more? What if that getting to $50,000 is maxing out your bracket at that? And then what if, just what if, you should also put some money in the 22% bracket, given what you're going to experience later. If you intend to fully, you know, I'm fully engaged in my career. I'm healthy as far as I know. Things are going to be going great. I need to take the divisor amount. I need to take the 86.
There's nothing that you can do to avoid the tax, though. You can't. As soon as it comes out to you, you tax it. There's nowhere you can transfer it to or anything like that?
Charity.
Well, charity, QCD. Okay. You can do the QCD.
But then you have to be 70 and a half.
Hang on a second.
You've
got to be 70 and a half to do that.
Yes, you have to be 70 and a half.
So you can have a beneficiary IRA, a non-spouse beneficiary IRA, and if you're over 70 and a half, you can do a qualified charitable distribution. So one way to avoid that, avoidance is legal. Evasion is not. Let's not get those two confused, okay?
The difference between in jail and out of jail,
sort of
like that.
Yeah, as Ed Slott says, I don't know, just ask the guy in the jail cell next to you. That's how to get the answer to that question. So avoidance is good. Now, another thing to think about is what other contributions could I make? Am I already filing my tax and taking not the standard deduction, but I'm itemizing deductions? I've got enough to do that. In that case, you may want to declare more income to take full advantage of that itemization. So everyone is different. Thank you very much. Well, who inherits $500,000 in a non-spouse beneficiary IRA? You wouldn't believe it. Lots more folks. And it then just causes further, more complex conversations. And that's when it gets interesting, doesn't it? Because it's real life. You know, we're seeing this. So, you know, what if it's a Roth? The Roth has to be emptied, but it's fully tax-free. The Roth would have to be emptied not on the required minimum distribution schedule, but on the schedule of saying, I need to wait maybe until it's fully mature. I love what's in that account. In this case, it might be 5 years. You want to take all the whole sum out of the Roth IRA. It's not taxable, but you're willing to let it grow tax-free. So having inherited that, from Joan, was it Joan or Jean?
I think it was Joan.
Joan, yes, yeah. Thank you.
Good old Joan.
Joan, thank you.
Poor old Joan.
So Joan in 22, you would not have to empty that Roth until 2032, and it'd be
seven
fully,
years.
Thank
no,
you,
yes,
tax-free.
7 years.
Yeah, excellent, see?
But if it was a Roth, you may want to wait until December, like, 30th to take that
30th
out.
30th of 22.
To get that full.
Of 32,
tax-free
rather.
Tax-free earnings.
Yeah. 2032. So real stories in the life of your finances with Dennis and the team just makes me feel all warm inside.
Well, it's really interesting because with the Secure Act and the Secure 2.0, they really complicated the beneficiary IRA landscape. So having someone to help you navigate and what's going to work best with you, because you can tell from our discussion, there's so many little things you can do. And the goal is for you to keep as much of that gift that you receive and pay as little in tax as you can.
Now, to be sure, there are three types of beneficiaries in these non-spouse beneficiary accounts. We only covered, as Heidi kind of alluded to, the non-eligible designated beneficiaries, or NEDBs, which I think is the dumbest moniker on the planet.
There's a few in the military that are pretty hard to remember.
Yeah. Why?
Nedib.
And how? Long story short, it can apply to you. Mm-hmm. And given that your parents, in this case, were savers, they've created a problem for you. What are you going to do to solve it? You know, creatively. What can I do with what there is? And that I still think, you know, even though Ed really discounts these accounts because they are fully taxable, they still can be worth rather significant amounts of money. And how you decide to plan this can make a huge amount of difference. So take this, or put this in mind, in terms of your overall picture. Use these to the extent that you can to further improve yourself. Who would want to do that, right? I would. Yeah. So let's all sing the same song together, shall we? How do we improve our own situation with what we've inherited, what we've grown, what we've saved? That's when it gets to be just plain fun.
Right. You know,
how can I make this account do some of the things I may have always wanted to do, maybe dreamed of doing? Maybe part of it is spending some of it. With questions yesterday, well, what if I don't want to take all these distributions? Nathan and I were talking with a business team yesterday. And given all this money we've accumulated, what if we don't want to take distributions? We're still working at 75. Well, there's several things you can do to postpone those. But keeping in mind, you may want some of that for income. But if you don't need it all or don't want to take it, just reinvest it. Open up a brokerage account, reinvest the proceeds. That's where you can really use these accounts as well.
And I have an example as well. I have a client who's a son of another one of our clients who passed away. And he takes his RMD each year and uses the funds from the beneficiary IRA that he gets. And he uses that cash to fund a Roth IRA for himself because he doesn't have the savings to do that outside of work. Mm-hmm. But here is a source. He pays his tax. And then he takes the net and puts it in as a contribution to his Roth because he's working and building his future that way. So that gift from his father is able to make his retirement better.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's the age limit for a Roth contribution, Heidi? I'm just curious. What is that?
You just have to have earned income.
There is no age limit. Wow. Rod, if we're still working when we're 90, we could fund a Roth IRA if we wanted to.
The young guy cutting your lawn could open a Roth IRA.
He could.
He could.
As well.
Okay. As long as he reports his income.
Of course, yes.
Of course.
Yes. It does have to be reportable so that the IRS can know indeed he or she did have income. Now, again, the other thing is who's going to know? Just make certain that if you haven't taken those distributions, going back to Joan's example one more time, let's say in this case, Pete is his name, who inherited the account. I don't remember who I referenced there, but let's just call him Pete in this case. Pete doesn't take any RMDs for 5 more years. Well, those RMDs totaled $150,000, let's say, his own required minimum distributions. The penalties on that are going to be about $37,000. 25% of $150,000 in this case. So if he hasn't taken those required minimum distributions from this inherited IRA account, the penalties are significant. That's 25% of $150,000.
I think that would be a material difference.
It is a material difference. And which pocket would you rather have it in, the feds or yourself? Mm-hmm. The question of the day. All right, let's take a break, shall we, Ron?
We have a few comments and perhaps a question.
Sure, you betcha. Okay.
Going back to the beginning of the show, I think this is directed, though, to Beth. It says, thanks, Heidi, but thanks, Beth. I didn't realize I was lovely until just now. Didn't you say...
I did, yeah.
Hello to all of our lovely... And then also from the beginning of the show, somebody said, will someone please give Dennis his meds?
Calm down there, Dennis.
Let's see.
Thank you.
Someone says, Dennis talks about deductions. Am I confused? I'm confused. Or is it 10,000 to itemize? What is it to...
No, but
don't they give you an automatic 25 grand for a couple, right?
The standard deduction, yeah. Yes. They may be thinking the gift amounts. The standard deduction for married filing jointly in 25 is $30,000.
Wow, geez.
That's huge.
So you take what you earned and lop $30,000 off.
Exactly. So yeah. Which is more, the itemized or the standard?
Yeah. Okay. So that simplified it for a lot of people.
You don't really have to keep track
of your charitable donations or anything like that. Yeah.
It also made your charitable donations much less valuable unless you're doing the QCD, the Qualified Charitable Distribution, where it avoids the taxable income altogether.
But you have to be 70 and a half.
Correct. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Is the RMD rate for an inherited IRA determined by the deceased rate or the rate of the recipient?
Great question. Uh-huh. Rock and roll. I love it. It's determined by the deceased and their RMD, not based on yours.
All right.
Previously, it was based on yours so many years ago before the Act.
Secure Act.
Thank you. Right. The non-secure Act.
We have a couple of questions that have just come in. Is the Roth backdoor contributions still okay?
You bet. The IRS didn't necessarily like that moniker, but that is a backdoor contribution available for those whose income is too high to make a Roth contribution. They can make a non-deductible IRA contribution and convert it immediately to a Roth. Now, unfortunately, if you have other IRA balances, those have to come into the equation to determine any tax owed on that.
I didn't know there was an age limit on a Roth IRA. Or not an age limit, but an income limit.
There is.
Ah.
Yeah, the income limit for 2025 for married filing jointly, we always refer to one area, is $236,000 to $246,000. So it's pretty significant, but it is an income limit.
I mean, in that range, you cannot open a Roth IRA.
After that range, after 246, you can't
open. After 246, yeah.
If it's between those sums, then it's graduated. If it's exactly between, that means you could contribute half of the allowed Roth contribution for the previous, or for that year, rather.
And that's where your employer plan can really be great for you if you're a higher income earner, because there is no restriction within the plan. So if you had a 401k, you could, if your plan allows, put in your contributions as Roth and be able to fund eventually a Roth IRA
when
you take it out of there.
And that's a common mistake that 401k, 403b participants make. There is no income limitation on funding your Roth within those accounts. The income limitations do not apply.
Okay.
That'd be significant. By the way, a correction, an errata. I said that the RMD was based for the inherited IRA owner. A non-spouse beneficiary is based on the original owner's date of birth. It's actually based on the inheritor's recipient's date of birth. My apologies there. That's why it really pays to review this sort of thing in person with the advisor. And that's why we discuss these things as being so complex, so that you'll come in and see us. You know what I'm saying?
let's see. Why are the RMD in place, restricted or required minimum distribution? Why do we have that? Is it to place more of our money back in the government via taxes? That's what somebody asked.
Well, my theory. I have a theory.
Yeah, go with your theory.
Why does the law require you at a certain age to start taking money out of your retirement account, even if you don't want it or don't need it? Why?
Because the government can't tax you on that until you take it out. And so they see all these balances and IRAs, and they grow and they grow. And maybe they don't feel people are taking them out quickly enough.
Well.
So to encourage them, they require it, and they fine you if you don't do it.
How about that?
Yes.
That's just a theory.
Now, the percentages, I still recall the gentleman who got red in the face. I mean, he loved his IRAs. When I told him he was going to have to start taking RMDs, what?
What?
Because he was a saver. So at age, 75, the percentage is about 4% that you have to take of your all of your IRAs. And in some cases, your 401ks, if you're no longer working there. At age 80, it's about 5%. At age 85, about 6.25%. So it gradually increases. Now, the only way, and we've talked about this before, that it could be less than that, is if your spouse is more than 10 years younger than yourself.
Yes. Could be a strategy.
Could be. Indeed. All right.
All righty then. Let's see.
So that's Bill Belichick's strategy. There you go.
Belichick, yeah. We'll call it that.
I knew there was a reason he was seeing her. Okay. But you do have to be married. That's the other part of it. Yes. It is a marriage requirement. Here comes that proposal down the road. Just you wait.
Wait.
All right. Heidi, we're talking about scams. There's a whole article we're covering here from the same newsletter, newsletter from Ed Slott on scams. Please.
So this is Avoid the Big Scam. So this was written by an advisor who is part of our Master Elite Advisor Group at Ed Slott, Robert Ciliano, I think is how you pronounce his name. So Robert had, he was speaking at a large event to a lot of seniors, and he just asked people out in the audience how many people had been victimized by a scam. And he said two people raised their hands, and he was like, you know, this is just 500 people. There's two, and you just think of the thousands and thousands of retirees out there, how many people might be scammed.
You said between the two of them, they'd lost $600,000. Mm. These are not small sums, obviously.
And so the sheer scale of those losses makes it something that, you know, we want to look at prevention efforts to protect people out there from these kinds of scams. Scammers are patient and calculated in their approach to build trust with their victims before defrauding them of substantial amount of money. It's sophisticated and emotionally manipulative, and what Robert did is he actually started interacting with a scammer who had contacted him, a perpetrator, and he said he started interacting with this person, and he said it was very frequent. They got up to daily of exchanges of 6 to 8 times, either through Twitter or texting or Instagram or WhatsApp or whatever you use out there. So they initiated contact, and they started talking back and forth. And he said this constant, seemingly innocent attention fosters a sense of warmth and welcome, prioritizing trust building over maybe through romance, or if someone is lonely. It's engineered to give a connection to the person who is scamming.
So obviously, as a part of this, it's a friendship. They're trying to start a friendship, in essence, by overcoming your defenses with getting to know someone. And in many cases, they can be extremely effective. They've had a lot of practice at it.
Right. And so Robert notes that most scam victims are ineligible to deduct their losses. So that results in a depletion of their assets, which could be critical in maintaining their financial plan. So let's talk about some of the grooming techniques that they use in these scams. So the first is that initial contact. They said a lot of times it's just as simple as somebody saying, oh, I had the wrong number, or unsolicited post on social media, or maybe it's through a dating app. Perpetrators may create fake profiles with attractive photos and fabricated personal details in order to appear successful and appealing. These initial efforts are designed to elicit a response. Even a simple correction about the wrong number can start that conversation. Mm. All right. And then they move into the next phase, which would be building trust and rapport. So this is crucial and often a lengthy phase during which the scammer dedicates time and effort to cultivate a relationship with the victim through daily conversations or maybe mirroring the victim's interests. So if you say you're interested in woodworking, all of a sudden, you know, oh, you know, they're talking about woodworking to draw you in.
So this can go on for some time. They're extremely patient as a part of this.
And in romantic-focused scams, the con artist may express romantic interest and shower the victim with attention and virtual affection.
And for those who, you know, we've got loved ones around us who might be susceptible to this, this is a great thing, too, to be aware of how this works and what's actually could be happening behind the scenes.
Right. And then we get to the next phase. Introducing the investment opportunity. Once a significant level of trust is established, the scammer subtly introduces the idea of a lucrative investment opportunity, often involving cryptocurrency. They might talk about fabricated successful investments they've had in the past and how well it does. They may mirror legitimate platforms or apps that promise high returns in a short period of time. And then they usually follow up with, this is a limited time opportunity to sort of, you know, make that time crunch to give that a little extra push. Then we move into guiding the investment. And this is the process where they get you to start opening a cryptocurrency account on a legitimate exchange and transferring funds to what is said to be an investment platform, but unbeknownst to the payer, this platform is fraudulent and controlled by the scammers. So initially, the victim might see fabricated gains on the platform. So it may look like what you're used to seeing with your legitimate investments. It may mirror that or look like it, but it is being controlled by the scammers. So then we come to the painful part, which is when they start to make demands. The scammers manipulate the fake platform to show increasing but entirely fictitious profits. But
hang on a second.
Yeah.
So they've got a whole screen set up that makes this investment look real. That is freak out phase.
It's very scary.
That is really scary. So how can we get this information out to listeners?
Listeners can call the office and ask for the copy of Ed Slott's newsletter, and we can get that to them.
Yes, we can get that to you. Investors and advisors, avoid this big scam from the Ed Slott article. So there are great points in here that listeners should be aware of. I've got friends whose parents have been subjected to this, and it is devastating what happens to the individual, how they can be pulled in by this, and, you know, obviously the children have to listen to all of this too, and they start, you know, may start wondering, well, is this real or is this a scam? So, you know, being very aware of this and how this can happen. Arm yourselves, okay? Man, yeah. It's scary.
General rule of thumb, I would say, don't make any payments online or even, like, they have these Bitcoin crypto machines that convert to cash or whatever, vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But none of that unless you're sitting in front of Dennis or your banker or your utility and have that pre-set up, but nothing new.
That's techniques to avoid getting sucked into this. They say never send money to someone you've only met online.
Hello.
Be suspicious of any request for money, regardless of the reason. Scammers often fabricate emergencies or claim they need funds. So if you haven't met the person in person, they may not be a person. You know?
We've seen people in the business world who have just been around the block, you know, very aware, get taken in by this stuff.
Yeah.
So please be cautious.
I saw the person. They were on my computer. I was on their website.
Oh, my gosh.
Like the guy in this article, the person he contacted, he said it was a picture of a model from like some European magazine because that was the picture they used as their picture, you know, of who they were. But some victims don't even realize there's a problem until they try to withdraw funds and they find out that a substantial amount has been stolen. They also might encounter from this platform demands for taxes and fees and other made-up charges that must be paid before your funds can be returned to you. This is all part of that scam. Eventually, all communication will cease. And the victim will realize the bad news and the money is gone.
Wow.
So. And you hear these stories and you think, oh, man, it would never happen to me. Or you're standing back and you can see right through it. But these things happen and they happen to a lot of people.
They do.
These people are professionals and they spend some time grooming, psychology, all that stuff. So
they are the worst of the worst. I get so angry at this. This is so low. Yeah. It's disgusting.
And this is where your financial advisor can really be a big help to you.
Yes.
Because if you're working with someone you've built a relationship to, you should run these things by them. We are trained and we take education on how to spot these patterns. But somebody that you talk to, and a lot of times these scammers will say, well, don't tell your financial advisor, you know, this is new. Right. They don't know what this is. This opportunity will pass you by.
So they'll try to lionize or make negative comments about the current people in your life. That's a first sign that there is major problems with this. So preferred prey, if you will, lonely or emotionally vulnerable individuals, 1. 2, seniors. 3, individuals seeking financial opportunities, and lastly, people who are naturally trusting. So if that qualifies for yourself, perhaps, or for those that you love, keep on this. You know, make yourself more aware. Educate yourself, okay?
Yeah. We'll go to a quick phone call.
Okay, all right.
For Prout Financial Design, New Retirement Radio, John in Traverse City. Hello, John.
Yeah, hi, how are you?
Good.
Hello, John.
Yeah, I just tuned in. You may have answered this already, but in regards to the Roth IRA,
sure,
there is no RMD required?
No required minimum distributions on a Roth the owner. Now, for a child, generally, who inherits that that Roth, those distributions are required. It is required to be emptied over a 10-year period, but it's totally tax-free. As they draw those monies out, okay?
Okay, very good. Thank you so much. Appreciate
it. Thank you, John.
Thank you, John. So I didn't realize Roth IRA, if you die and your child gets the beneficiary,
sure,
they've got 10 years to take that money out.
They do.
Mm-hmm. But it's not taxed.
It's not taxed.
Correct.
Wow.
So it's you pay the tax at your rate.
Because it's Roth.
Because it's a Roth.
Okay.
Correct. Yep. So, expand the time horizon. At the cost of conversion, think not just about yourself. That almost feels like a John Kennedy quote. But think about those who are inheriting those accounts. Jack Kennedy, I should have said. Roth IRA, NEDBs never have to take annual RMDs, regardless of when the IRA owner died. Yes, correct. There are no RMDs on that Roth, but you do have to empty it after the end of the 10th year, after the year of inheritance.
But that annual requirement.
Correct. Within the 10-year period of inheriting that account, I should say.
Wow. You mentioned JFK. Today is his birthday. He was born 1917, John F. Kennedy.
Amazing.
Yeah, amazing.
Here's his famous quote. Take it to heart.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
It is.
Yeah, that's powerful even today.
Yep.
On the text line, I thought an important question. What happens to a Roth after 10 years if it's not emptied?
Well, what happens after 10 years there, Heidi?
Penalties.
We're looking at you.
25% penalty, because failure to take the last RMD payment.
Yeah.
25%.
25% of the
plus
amount
taxes,
not
right?
taken. Yeah, so it's extremely expensive. That's very expensive. Now, nobody would have encountered that 10-year period yet, But when period starts up, it's going to be painful. You betcha. Yeah. Unless they change the rules, of course, which they could possibly do.
All right, let's go to Old Mission Peninsula.
You bet.
John is on the phone. Good morning, John.
Hello there.
Hello.
Hey, hello, John.
I wanted to thank you for pushing that whole security and scam issue. I'm a retired security manager from a Fortune 100 company, so I take a lot of that to heart. Despite that, I've been beating on my mother and then her husband, you know, when they marry at 70, it's not really your stepfather. But anyway, I had been, you know, if you have questions, call me, call me, call me. Do not, anybody ask you for money, call me. We'll talk it out. He got a quote, call from his grandson, end quote. Needed money because he was in jail, and he said it sounded just like you. You've heard stories.
Artificial intelligence.
Fortunately, he didn't have that much money in his checking account. He called his security person, who I had a very good relationship with, and he said, that sounds like a scam. Mm-hmm. And she said, have you called him? Have you called his parents? Son of a gun. He was sitting in his kitchen having breakfast.
Wow. Man, I appreciate that call. Your call, sir. Man, in that example, that is a great example of how they try to do the worst, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And another one that he got hit with, I'm sure he's on somebody's list of idiots. I mean, excuse me. Yeah. Somebody called and said, your gas bill's going to be shut off. Mm-hmm. We need a charge card right now. Fortunately, a friend said, after he'd given out the charge card number, a friend called and said, no, I'm sure that's a scam. And they had to cancel the credit card and go through all that.
The gas company would never call up and say you're going to be canceled. You know, they wouldn't do it that way.
But the guys were already online. They were already on their way to turn off their gas, so why would they call? You know?
Yeah, they wouldn't take credit card payment over the phone.
No.
All right, John, thanks for that call. We did have one clarifying text. Somebody said, so when I pass away, before my wife, she should shop for a spouse at least 10 years younger than her, was the question.
Like I said, that could be a strategy.
Yes, it could be.
ProutFinancialDesign.com for more info. Thank you, Dennis Prout, Heidi Cartwright, Beth Shire. Thank you all.
Thank you, Ron.
Thanks, Ron.